Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm Belinda Ellsworth, and I've got a great guest today, Danny Levin. Danny walked away from an opportunity to run a business that was a household name in order to hitchhike around the world to find happiness and inner peace. The people he met along his journey reminded him a lot of the characters in his book, Mosaic. For most of his life, Danny felt different. He saw things others did not see and thought in ways that were unlike the ways of his peers. He felt alone and isolated. This all changed when he started to work with government and corporations seeking innovation. Suddenly, it was his ability to see differently that made him a sought-out commodity. Danny, a connectivity expert and business leader, works with governments, organizations, corporations, and businesses to improve how people treat themselves and each other. Sharing a message of unification, he is a sought-after speaker for groups whose focus is working together rather than fighting one side against the other. He is married to the woman of his dreams and is the lucky father of a beautiful special needs daughter who teaches him unconditional love, a fun-loving stepson, a brilliant stepdaughter, and a very needy golden retriever. They live together 3 blocks from the ocean, feeling very blessed to be alive. It is my pleasure to welcome Danny Levin.
Belinda, thank you so much, and thank you for the honor of being on your podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's always fun to have interesting people on the show who bring a different perspective to life. So let's jump right in and fill in some of the gaps from your bio. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and then your journey.
Fabulous. I've had one of the richest lives you could ever imagine because I've been able to sit with some of the most influential and richest people the world has ever known. And I've also had the blessed opportunity to sit with some of the poorest people mankind has ever seen. And one of the things that has really touched me through my experience of life around me is that no matter what our color, no matter what our race, no matter what our religion or our economic platform, no matter what border we live behind, no matter what sex we are, or no matter what philosophy we practice, we are so much more alike than we're different. And it feels like to me this whole world right now is siloed into like-minded communities, which I always thought were fabulous. And it was something I always sought out. But more and more what I'm seeing now is these like-minded communities are separating us from each other. And we are living in silos that are getting bigger and stronger and more powerful, but they are isolating us from the rest of the world. And the space between our silos is getting wider and deeper, where people are standing on two sides of an issue, fighting one another, rather than coming out of their silos to the middle, which is the field that exists between us, and finding similarity. So the work that I do, the place that I'm at right now, is in ending these vertical relationships of sitting in a silo and yelling from the window, from the top of the window of the silo onto the field below, because nobody's in those field belows anymore. Very few people are. And dissolving, melting those silos through the commonality of what we all feel. When you and I, Belinda, no matter who we are, when our children get hurt, we feel pain. When we get pricked and bleed, our blood comes out red. We are the same, even though we feel and act and think we're different. That's what we're trying to get together.
All right. Well, that's pretty, those are some pretty profound statements, and I wouldn't disagree with any of them. But, and that's a big agenda, wouldn't you agree?
Very big. And yet, if we continue in the way that we're going, where we're siloed, what's our reality? we know what the reality is. If we continue to do what we're doing, the space between us gets larger. The distance between us gets more. The hatred and bigotry continues to grow. The disagreements come to the surface more. And so what's really needed now is a change. It feels to me like there is a new paradigm, and Buckminster Fuller said it really well. He said, you can't change to a new way of thinking with the thinking of the old way. You have to invite a new paradigm that makes the old paradigm obsolete. And one of the things I find when I speak with people is what I say makes sense. Everybody gets it. And yet something still is preventing us from having the courage to take a step away from what is and enter into this place where what could be, which is miraculous.
Wow. So tell us a little bit then about your business today, and how's this shaped your lifestyle?
It is miraculous. My business today is the living representation of who I am as a human being. And it has been full of tremendous highs and tumultuous lows. Because when you are part of trying to create a new paradigm that people don't naturally, we want to put everything in a box, don't we? Don't we want to just, oh, that sounds like this, and we make it somehow. But if you've never seen the color purple, and I try and explain to you what the color purple is, how do you do that? So what I find is, in a lot of the conversations that I have, the ideas, though they seem like common sense, are really hard for people to understand straight up front. Because it's a new way. It's a new modality. What my business now is about, and when I work with government organizations or companies, what I look to is ending vertical relationships where people tell us what to do, where people are authoritative and give over information. Even in the self-help movement, we have teachers that tell us what to do, and the people that feel they need help go to those teachers to learn what to do. What if the paradigm was completely different? What if none of us were broken? What if none of us needed to be fixed? What if all we needed to do was see what we don't see? What if just behind the vision of what we see now is another almost parallel reality that exists at the same time, where every voice connected makes something possible that isn't possible now? And the clearest example I can give you is, a friend of mine sent me a illustration, and it had a man standing on the left and a man standing on the right. And in between them on the ground was the number 6. But the man standing on one side saw it as a 9, and the man standing on the other saw it as a 6. And they started arguing about what it was. We will continue to argue as long as we don't allow the other person to share their perspective with us. But when we share perspectives, suddenly we see what we never saw before. And if my definition of possible is I don't see a way to make it possible, then maybe suddenly the impossible becomes possible. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Definitely. So one of the things that's kind of always a highlight of the show is, like, what do you feel are two of your greatest skill sets that have really helped to propel you forward with your business and in life?
There's something about me, and it sounds a little pretentious to say without knowing me a little bit, and knowing that I don't mean it pretentiously at all, is that I have just such a great love for humanity that I really honor and respect people and want what's best for them. And so there's something very unthreatening about that when I sit with people, and people tell me all the time, whether it be a government organization or a corporation or an individual or someone that's having trouble with their family, they say to me, I'm saying things to you that I haven't even told my best friend. I wonder why. And after hearing it once or twice, you just think, oh, well, something just happened. But after hearing it 1,000 times, I started to realize that when I'm able to hold the space for people to be completely comfortable in who they are, they allow themselves to be who they are. And that feels incredibly good. And so there's no need. The way I look at people is that they're beautiful just the way they are. And I got that gift from having a developmentally delayed daughter. I have the honor of having a beautiful 28-year-old developmentally delayed child. And I have to tell you, I didn't think it was always an honor. Sometimes I thought it was not an honor, that it was a curse. And we went through hard times together trying to get it to understand. But she's taught me something that I really think is so profound. And it's really simple. She doesn't communicate like you and I communicate. So when she has something to say, she's not able to use her mouth so much. But because her speech is depleted, her other senses are more enlightened. And she has the ability, strange as it sounds, to be able to put her thought into my mind. And it's amazing how many times I pick that thought up and I get it. I understand her. And she's happy because I understand her. She understands that. But sometimes I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And when I don't understand her, I ask her to use her words. And she tries to use her words. And sometimes I'll get it because I understand the way she speaks. After 28 years, I have a sense of what she's trying to say. But there are times that I don't get it. And when I don't get it, she speaks louder, thinking that it's the volume of why. I'm not hearing her, so she says it louder. And after she says it louder and I still don't get it, she'll sometimes throw a tantrum. And after she throws a tantrum and I still don't get her, what will happen is she'll come running at me to try and rip my shirt or bite me. It took me a long time to realize it, but every single person I know, whether they be the head of a government, head of a corporation, or just part of a family, or just friends of mine, do exactly the same thing, but they're a little more concerned about how they come across to others. If they speak and they don't get heard, they speak louder. If they scream and they don't get heard, they try and create chaos. They try and create a scene. If in creating a scene, that doesn't work, then they try and destroy something. And I watch it. And what happens for people, if you look and retrofit it back to what really people are asking, what really my daughter is asking, is she just wants people to hear what she has to say. She just wants to be heard. And in anything, if we would just listen to one another, and the ability that I have then to listen to another person taught to me by my 28-year-old developmentally delayed daughter is probably the greatest gift I bring to anything.
Wow.
Does that make sense to you?
No, it makes complete sense. So, and thanks for sharing that. That's really
absolutely
a great personal story as well. It's a great analogy for anybody listening to get a really good, complete understanding of that. So thank you.
So yeah, it's amazing how connected we all are.
Right. So obviously that is clearly one of your most outstanding accomplishments. Tell us a little bit about your book, though.
Thank you so much. So the mosaic is this. I thought it was going to take me about 2 or 3 months to write. It's a fable. It's a story about a boy who loses his parents 2 years apart on the same day. And when he asks the adults where his parents are, they tell him they're in this place called heaven. So the young boy, having no idea what heaven is or where to find it, just sets out in search of heaven. And he starts to travel around just walking. And the people that he meets along the way are surprise him sort of, because they're just regular, ordinary people. They're a trash man and a street artist and a gardener and a juice man, a blind woman. Not necessarily the people that you would think are these great archetypes of things that would help us. But what he sees is when he spends time and speaks with these people just for even a few minutes, he realizes the person he initially saw is not at all the person that he knows they are now. And when he finally realizes that what he sees is not what is, but just what he sees, he meets a monk who unzips the sky and walks him through to a parallel reality where he meets the keeper of the mosaic. And I'll leave the rest of it as a surprise for those of you who want to read it. It's available on Amazon. It's called The Mosaic in Amazon. But here's the beautiful thing about this book. In a very non-threatening, simple, charming little story, it asks probably the most threatening question a person could ever be asked. And that question is, what would you see if you could see what you don't see? Because we know you see what you see. And what you see is making you live the world, the life that you live. And if you're happy living that life, continue doing it. There's nothing wrong with that. That's perfect. If you're unhappy living it and you want to continue living unhappy, continue doing it. There's nothing wrong with that. But what would you see if you could see just beyond what you see? You know those drawings that they make of the, in one way it looks like an old hag and the other way it looks like a young socialite?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And you know that when you look at one, you can't see the other. Well, what would happen if what we see is actually blocking us from seeing something much more real? What would we see? What would that world look like? And I think it's time to start to see the unseen. Because for me, at least, when I look at the world that I'm living in now, sure, it's working for some of us, but it's not working for most of us. And the separation and the angst and the anxiety and the disagreement and the argumentation and all this sides versus one another, it's hard to look anywhere and not find people opposed to one another. Not just in government and politics, but in male-female relationships, in environment, in anywhere, in religion, in science. I mean, where can't you look? Or where can you look where there's harmony of faith and belief? So I think it's time to start to see something different than we're looking at. And I invite people to have the courage in their positions, in their place in this world, to see beyond what they see. And what would that hold for us?
Wow. So one of the big questions of the show also is, what does working from your happy place mean to you? And this is one that is probably, people always say to me, this is the most difficult question for me to answer. And at the same time, it's the most diverse answers that I get, which I absolutely love. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
I love it. Because what the mosaic has shown me is connected we're happy, disconnected we suffer. And it really comes down to that simple. And when I talk about connection, well, let me ask you, when I talk about connection, what do you think that, like, tell me where your mind goes when I say connection. What is it connected to?
Well, when you say connections, I mean, my mind went immediately to the relationships that I have and how well do I nurture those relationships, or how well am I really connected with those individuals. And I sometimes do a great job of that. I always used to set aside Wednesdays for just nothing but reaching out to people that I haven't chatted with in a while. I nurture my old high school relationships. People are always saying to me, how are you still in contact and have so many of your high school friends? Well, because I've worked at it for 30 years. It isn't something that just happened. Facebook has certainly broadened that to where we've added more people into that core. But there's a core of us that have, you know, always stayed in really good contact. Even if we don't personally see each other, we take time out to have a conversation, even if it's short. And I think that people get so busy with mundane tasks that they forget to stay connected to important, relationships or things that have value, the place to be, you know, creative versus following after mundane tasks every single day. And we have to do the mundane tasks, but it's like, if you don't carve out the time to do the other, you'll never find the time to do the other. That's what connected means to me.
Love it. So, and that's what it always, not quite as eloquently as you said it, but that's what it always had meant to me until I met the, until I started working, until this mosaic started to enter me, until it started to show me a redesign of that. And what it showed me is that in order to have the connection to others that I really want, there are three steps prior to that. And that is a connection to self. When I it's easier to do this when a video is on, but imagine for a moment that you're are you left-handed or right-handed?
I'm right-handed.
Okay. So take your right hand and make a fist, and with your left hand, I want you to protect yourself, okay? And with your right hand, I want you to take a fist and try and hit yourself in the face. But I don't want you to hit yourself in the face. I want you to protect yourself with your left hand. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So when I do that, my right hand comes – my left hand protects me at about 3 inches from my face. You with me?
Yep.
Okay. If I'm not connected to myself, in other words, if I'm not kind to myself – which I'm not all the time. I'm really hard on myself, Belinda. And I find a lot of people that I come in contact with, maybe they're just mirror who I am, are really hard on themselves. They put themselves down a lot. They beat themselves up a lot. Well, when I'm not connected to myself, when I'm constantly hitting myself hundreds of times a day, and my border around me, my walls around me to protect myself from me are 3 inches from my core, from my being, that doesn't allow me to experience much of the world or give much of myself to the world, does it?
No.
Okay, so I find a lot of people have walls around them, myself included, that keep us from actually being able to connect really well. When I start to be kind to myself, when I try to treat myself well, for instance, if you and I were to go for a walk and you would fall down, here's my promise to you. I would lay down next to you and ask and make sure you're okay. And when you felt that you were okay, I would ask if you're ready to get up, and I would help you to get up if you needed my help. And once we got up, I would hold you for a minute to make sure you were stable, to make sure you were able to stand on your own, to make sure you were able to move. And then when you were ready to move, I'd walk with you 10 steps. And once I saw you could walk 10 steps, I would watch you walk another 20 steps just to make sure you were fine. Nice, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you and I were walking, Belinda, and I fell down, I would say, you stupid son of a gun, you're such a clumsy guy. You can't even walk. You know, here you are, you just met this woman, Belinda, you're walking with her and you trip. What an idiot you are. And I started to ask myself, why would I treat someone I don't know, you, nicer than someone I do know, me? And when I can start to treat myself as kindly as I would treat you, I'm on the road to starting to understand myself a little bit better. And once I start to be kind to myself, that wall that protects my hand from hitting my face can come down. And suddenly, I have a whole nother world in front of me. Now, I may build the wall in front of you when I see you, but you're a few feet away from me. So I have at least some space. The next connection that happens then is a connection to source. Some people call it God, some people call it source. I don't really want to care if it's religious or not religious, but to something that's greater, to a force that's greater than any of us. And when we realize that we are connected to source, what it allows us to be is a little bit more vulnerable. It allows us to realize it's not just us that is walking through this world making decisions, but there's a power that's connecting us. The fact that you and I are on this conversation means that Mosaic has already connected us, because 2 months ago, 2 weeks ago, we didn't even know each other, right?
Right, absolutely.
And so there's some sort of connection that's happening that's bigger than us, that's allowing us to come together and share some moments together. When I connect to that source, then suddenly I'm open to lots of things. But I don't know if this is true in your world. It certainly is true in mine. When I ask people why they think they're here, so many times I get, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And we live the life that's in front of us, not the life that's actually ours. But when we start to become more vulnerable, when we're open to source, we start to hear, possibly, the purpose for why we were created. And if people would realize that creation doesn't need to recreate things over and over to have the same result, that from the beginning of time till this moment, there's never been another person created to do what we've come here to do. And from this moment till the end of time, there will never be another person created to do what we came to do, because we've done it. Wouldn't that space and time be sort of important?
Well, like, of course. Yeah.
Right? Wouldn't that be like an incredibly important moment to find out why we're here and what we're supposed to do?
Oh, absolutely.
So now imagine a person that is kind to themselves, a person that is vulnerable and open to what the world is giving to them and what they have to give back to the world, and a person who knows their purpose. Imagine that person now connecting with others. Can you imagine how powerful those connections are?
Yes.
And so connected to me, working from my happy place, means when I am connected to self, source, purpose, and others, I am happy. I have a lot of connections that I'm things I'm connected to that don't make me happy, right?
Right.
And so I need to learn how to disconnect from those, mm-hmm. so that I can connect in a more kind, loving, vulnerable, purposeful way to the connections that will bring me the joy that connection brings.
And I think that's really difficult for people too. They stay in, whether it's work or personal, or I see it all of the time of people just being with people that they don't particularly care for.
Yeah.
And it's such a waste of energy. I find myself when I'm not happy, I usually stop and look, and it's like I somehow went down a path. It was a simple path at first, and then it just kept getting deeper into the woods that you're like, I am not enjoying being here. And I don't know exactly how it happened, but I'm getting much, much better at saying, I need to end this because it's not where I want to be. Where I think in years past, I just continued to say, well, this is where I'm at this time and space, and I just have to deal with it. And we really don't. We have choices of where we want to spend our time, our energy, where we want to put our talents. So I think that over the years, I've become much more in tune with that and being, you know, just pickier about who I choose to spend my time with.
Congratulations. And if you look at the image of a mosaic, which is just such a beautifully simple image, you find that there are tile pieces surrounded by other tile pieces, surrounded by other tile pieces, surrounded by other tile pieces. And when you change any part of your life, it means disrupting all those pieces, not only your immediate circle that surrounds you, but the circles that surround those circles. And it makes me understand why sometimes it's so hard for people to just change what they're doing, because that disruption takes a lot of courage.
It does. I mean, the perfect example of that, of people listening to that, is, you know, when you go through a divorce, you don't just divorce this spouse that you have. It's the circle of friends, and people can't seem to be able to be both. And so they feel this need to choose. And there's a disruption in, you know, the what you did on a regular basis and what those other relationships represented. And it's very, very, you know, my divorce was challenging, but I think the greatest thing that was challenging for me, other than the day in, day out things, which I think people expect, it was those relationships that you just, you somehow never have again. And you're like, wow, how did that happen? But it does. And I think that's probably it's like when a little drip of water goes and then you watch that ring and then the ring goes out and the ring goes out. Yeah. It's kind of like that ripple effect and that's why I think people, you know, stick with sometimes toxic relationships in work or in personal, because they don't want to deal with the ripple effect.
So I love when a conversation comes full circle in some ways, okay? Because remember, we started talking about silos and people on one side or another.
Right.
And we start to see how insidious it is that it's not just in our politics, but it's in our relationships. That when a divorce causes people to side with one side versus the other, how painful that is. And how important it is to dissolve those silos and to be able to say to people, I completely hear why this pains you. I completely understand that my divorce has brought you pain. And I still love you. And no matter who you side with, I will still love you, because you are my friend. And I know in the relationships that I have where I am friends with people, some of my friends believe things that I would never believe, nor would I ever want my children to believe. Like they just believe the exact opposite of what I believe, but they're my friends. And I hold the space for them to be able to believe whatever they want to believe, because I have no right to tell them what to believe. And we share enough common ground that we're still good friends, and we can still talk about the things we disagree with. We don't avoid them. We can talk about them, but we talk about them from a place of friendship rather than a place of anger. That, more than anything, is what the mosaic is. The mosaic is the coming together of every single voice, every single piece, every single point of view, every color, and realizing that all of the pieces together make the artistry of what this mosaic is. And without them, we would be less beautiful.
Wow. So with that in closing, because that was pretty profound, why don't you tell us a little bit about something you're working on right now that you'd love our listeners to know about? And then how can people find you, Danny?
Those are the same question for me, thank God. As this mosaic develops, part of what's happening is my website is developing and changing. Right now, my website is danielbrucelevin.com, but it will morph into something much simpler, much easier, much more clear than what it is right now. So danielbrucelevin.com will either be the place you can find me, or it will be themosaiconline.com. We're still not sure which of those landing pages we will use, but one of them will find me. I can also send you links outside of this that can take you to my Facebook page and my LinkedIn page and all of that. But the thing that perhaps would be the best way is if people are intrigued at all by this conversation, I would love for them to go to Amazon and to purchase the book, The Mosaic. It's less about making money from it, because a lot of the money we're going to give away to organizations and things like that that help bring people together. It's more about, how do we get a conversation like this started? How do we talk to a world that stands in disagreement about seeing what they don't see? Because when you ask the question, what would you see if you could see what you don't see? It also begs the possibility of asking the question, what if everything I believe is not true? What would happen if what I believe is only based on what I see? And if I could see something different, I might believe something different. What does that do to shake the foundation of the world that we all stand on? But once that foundation is shaken, what exists is a world of possibilities, a world where something else could be real. What exists now is a world of isolated points of view, where only I'm right and you're wrong. Anybody that's not me is wrong. The world that I want to bring people to through this simple story is the world of possibilities. And it's time. I think enough of us are out there are tired of hearing all the fighting. And we want to just get to this place where together, if we come together, like our founding fathers said, and I'm talking about America now, but this message is for the world. If we, the people, come together and create a United States of America, do you believe there's anything we can't accomplish? Do you think if all of us stood on the side of ending homelessness, anybody would be homeless? How about hunger? Do you think anyone would go hungry if we all stood behind hunger? Do you think anybody would feel less than if all of us decided to make everybody feel equal or good? We have the power within us as the people, not a government, not a charity, not an organization, but just us, to come together and create miraculous things if we're willing to take a moment and see what we can't see. So start the conversation with the Mosaic on Amazon. And I will say, can I send you links that people can get in touch with me, ask questions?
Absolutely. So we will put that. Yes, we will put that in the show notes so that people can find those. And thank you so much for taking your time and sharing your incredible insights with us today.
It is such an honor. And Belinda, thank you for the work you're doing and for bringing happiness to the world in a new way.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.